This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com. Hello, welcome to another episode of Herding Code. We are joined today by a couple members of the Glitch team. Daniel Moore, who's a creator or one of the creators of Glitch, and Jen Schiffer, who is a noted web engineer, satirist, pixel artist, and now a community engineer working with the Glitch team. So thanks, guys, for joining us. We're really excited to talk about this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Okay, so why don't we start with the, like, you know, for people who aren't super familiar with what Glitch is, like, what's the 60 seconds description of what it is?
So Glitch is a website where you can go and create amazing apps, whatever you want. Your wildest dreams will come true. There's probably a little better way to say that.
It sounds basically like ZomboCom.
It's a lot like that. That was one of our key inspirations. Is like, if we could do a 2017 version of ZomboCom, I think that could be big. It was basically the whole thing. Well, not exactly. That's a lie. I'm lying to you. So Glitch is a website. It's an online editor. You can create your apps. And I guess what makes it different is, like, even a lot of these tools today, it's like, go to the command line and download and install this thing and then do your app and then figure out how to deploy it. But on Glitch, you go to glitch.com, you can see a gallery of projects that other people have made, like Facebook apps, Messenger bots, Twitter bots, Twilio, telephony, all kinds of different applications. And then you can just say, hey, this is kind of like what I want. Remix it, and it's running immediately. And in the browser, as a web-based code editor, you can change the code, and it automatically redeploys and reruns in just seconds. So you're basically directly manipulating your app live the whole time, and it's fun.
And so these are Node apps, right?
Yeah, currently it's all Node.js. We do have... Like, you can use other things. Some people are doing Python. Some people, I think Ruby even works on there too. But we're really emphasizing Node.js right now. We're not telling people you can't use Python, but we're just saying, hey, if you want to use it, we can't guarantee that it's going to keep working the way you like. But we'll, you know, do what we can not to break your stuff.
I always say, like, we unofficially support it if you want to try it out, because it's like a space to play around with, and it's in beta and it's new and we're playing around with it ourselves.
Yeah, I like to think of it as encouraging a thriving fringe community. So it's not really like the core product, but like there could be some cool ideas or some cool things that come out of it. And if we just said, no, you can't do that here, then we'd miss out on like all these possible directions and new ideas.
On your, like, getting started or welcome video or whatever, I really like the feel of it. And one of the things you show is the whole kind of view source ethic of the early web. You know, the kind of, like you're saying, remix, but just, like, get in and start playing and take away a lot of the friction. And I think that kind of sets the stage of, like, don't worry about it, just have fun kind of thing.
Yeah, I think one of the barriers to building on the web, whether you're an expert or not, is being afraid of breaking something or causing some sort of catastrophe. Even though most of the stuff that we're making, like, no one's going to die if we break it, you just also don't want to spend your entire afternoon fixing things because there is a break in the deploy process.
So what led you to make Glitch now? I mean, was there something that, you know, kind of prompted its birth?
So I've been working on web-based editors for like 10 years probably, in various incarnations. I started with like a pixel editor around 10 years ago, back when that was actually like really not straightforward how you would do it on the web. Like a few people had done it, but it was using like divs and things originally, and you just color the div and that's like a pixel. And it was before the Canvas existed, or it was like just starting to get standardized, the Canvas API. And then I tried to make an online game engine in the browser where you could edit your code and you could run your game. And that kind of worked okay, but it ended up being like a way too big project for one person. So it never quite succeeded. But the pixel editor is still around. And it's always been kind of a obsession of mine, or like an affliction, where I'm just trying to make weird stuff on the internet and see what happens. And I think finally, like, there have been other companies, there have been other tools that have made sort of web IDE or whatever that category of thing is. But I think a lot of the tooling, like this year, and a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of the ecosystem and sort of community mindset is now in place where like these tools can really thrive, I think.
I also want to mention that I think like there's three of us on the team that have made like art editor apps. So that's like part of our aesthetic, as well as the whole vaporwavy thing that we have going on Glitch.
Yeah, I think all three of our main sort of front end design people, Jen, myself, and Perjan, we each have our own pixel editor apps on the web.
And also, like, just like would prefer to make weird stuff that no one really knows that they actually need, but we think they need because they're weird.
Yeah. I think everyone does need it. They just don't know yet.
Right, exactly. I'm like, trust me. Like, you need all of this.
Yeah. You need more weird things in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I want to make a weird thing, what's the experience like? So I go to glitch.com, and then do I need to sign in? Do I, like, what do I do?
I mean, you could go there right now, and you could have your app done, and just, like, you could have an app running in seconds. Like, I challenge you to go there and try.
Well, I already did.
Let's live, let's live stream it. No,
let's
me through.
Let's pretend that I didn't.
Okay, so you go to Glitch. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll go there. I'll go to glitch.com.
This is his first time.
Yeah, this is my first time going there. Okay, I'm logged in, actually, so it's not my first time, because I see my face when I'm logged in. But so let's pretend I'm not logged in. Okay, I see all these apps. I see Featured App, Tech Forward, Make Your Own Slackbot, Teach Alexa New Skills. I'm going to click the Slackbot thing, because that sounds cool. I get like a little readme. It tells me, Slack onboarding bot. This project demonstrates how to build a Slack bot. It's like, okay, cool. And there's this green button. I'm going to say remix. I'm clicking. Okay, I clicked it. It's loading. All right. It's still loading. It's just a few seconds. Okay, boom. The editor's up. I see a readme. I see some files and a file tree. I see like a show button. Let's click that. Oh, it's already on the internet. I have a domain. I have a URL. It says eleganttruck.glitch.me example onboarding Slackbot. So I guess in about 10 or 15 seconds, I went from visiting glitch.com to having a live running app. I haven't even looked at the code yet, but I already have a running app. And now I can look at the code. Oh wow, this index, it's got a lot of stuff in here. I guess I'll have to slow down now and if I want to change things and modify it. But we've kind of like already started from a working position rather than saying, you start with nothing, not even a deployed app, not anything, and you have to figure out, read the docs, how to do a Slack bot, how to do all this stuff. It's like, here's a working one. It's already deployed. And now you can change like one line of code at a time and just sort of see what happens. I think for like even on the community site or like the gallery with all of the projects, say you don't like Slack bots. There's hundreds of other different apps you can make, sort of whatever you're interested in. You should be able to find something that will sort of help you get started.
And I think like it works that way for, again, like all different levels. I mean, if I'm a beginner that like doesn't know how to code, there are, you know, very simple static site apps, because it doesn't just have to be a Node app. We now have static pages, so you could just do front end index.html and show stuff. But we have users who will, for example, one day someone's like, oh, I want to like get into TypeScript, but I don't know where to start. And I went to glitch.com and someone on there had already made like a TypeScript wrapper for something. And now I'm writing TypeScript wrappers for literally everything in JavaScript that I've written. And so it serves a purpose of like giving you a place to start if you want to like figure out something to write or like learn how to write something, or you're just wondering where to get started and you already know how to write something like in TypeScript, but you just want something that's deployed already and you don't want to have to deal with that whole process of things. And we're like working on like adding a lot more stuff to the community site as things are coming out. You know, I put out when Glimmer.js was announced, I put out like the sort of hello world for Glimmer, and right now I'm working on some cool Next.js stuff so that people that are interested in something and don't know where to start can come and be like, oh, it's been started already. All I got to do is remix it and it's already working. And then I can like jump in and turn this all into whatever I want to be.
Yeah. I think to sort of go back to your original thing of, do you have to be logged in? Like, what do you need to do to start any of these? You can try everything anonymously first. You don't have to log in. You don't have to connect your account. Your app is already deployed even before you log in. So it's like one step, literally. It's not like first do these five steps and then it's one step. It's like it's already running, so don't worry about it. And if you like it, you like what you see, you can log in, you can come back to it, you can collect your apps and return to them and edit them later.
And you have the choice of whether to log in with GitHub, or maybe you're new and you don't know what GitHub is and haven't gotten to that, you can log in through Facebook. And one thing that I really like, and I think it's important when people are building tools for developers, is that we don't lock you into anything. You can import GitHub projects, you can export to GitHub or download a zip file. Like, everything you make will work if you put it anywhere else. So we're not like making you write apps in a specific weird way that we've created. It's not like proprietary or anything like that. And that, I think that's like a really important philosophy that our team has, is keeping it that way.
Yeah, we definitely want to follow sort of portability and web standards, and anything that works on Glitch should be easy to have working on Heroku, on your local machine, on a DigitalOcean droplet, like on AWS, wherever you want to deploy it. There shouldn't be any like weird thing that, oh, it only worked on Glitch and now you're stuck or something.
I think that's huge, because like there are a good amount of like little web editor kind of things out there and I can play with it. And then I'm worried about like, is it going to be there in a year, or am I going to be stuck with it or whatever? So that really does feel like a nice kind of thing where like you're saying, you can both export stuff, but it's also pretty easy to bring stuff in from GitHub. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so we've got import from GitHub button. And if you have a project, you basically select import from GitHub, you put in your you put in your repo, and it'll import it and then reload in the editor, and it'll have all the code from that repo. So it's like very easy for people to, like, if they have an example app that's already written, or if they see someone else has an example app, they can get started editing it on Glitch right away instead of having to like type it in or copy paste or upload some awkward thing. It's we don't yet have an upload zip, but we should do that at some point.
Now, is that connection to GitHub live, or is it like a one-time kind of slurp it into Glitch and that's where you're editing it now?
Currently, it's one time, and you can do it multiple times, like if you want to sync it, but it doesn't create like a live binding where if you push to GitHub, then your Glitch app pulls that automatically. We have some plans to do that in the future, but some of the nuance and edge cases around that can get, like, we want to think it through so it's not going to be weird for people.
One of the cool features is the sort of show live, and you know, the app changes as you edit it. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, so early on, I guess when we were building like the original prototype, you could sort of like type in, edit the code, it would, every sort of character as you type it gets sent to a backend container, and then it updates and restarts your server. And like in our original prototype, it was taking longer than it does now to show like your updates. It would take maybe 5 seconds or 10 seconds because it was like taking a while to restart things. And that felt terrible, actually. It was like surprising how bad it felt. It's like you make a change and you just have to wait and then you see it. And we found, like, as it improved, as our, the speed at which we could restart your container, the speed at which, like, the minimizing the path from when you type a character to when you see the result, once it got under about 1.5 seconds, it started, like, feeling really good. But if it was, like, 2 seconds, it felt terrible. And so, like, we'd keep trying to minimize that time. Like, ideally, we could get it to 100 milliseconds, and then it'd be, like, instantaneous, pure magic, amazing. But as it is now, we're kind of around like the 1 second mark, which is, feels good, but it's not pure magic yet.
You both said that you've all like kind of created some different things like this over the years. Are there things in like browser support and standards and things that made this workable now, you know, like thinking about collaboration, but also just other things. Like, I don't know if you're using like browser storage or any kind of stuff, you know, that makes it simpler to do this kind of stuff.
So currently we're using basically OTJS or something similar for the collaborative editing. It's basically the same lineage of like Firepad, which was a Firebase demo, and Etherpad, I think, or Hackpad. There's like 100 of these things over like the past 5 years, but like now it's easy enough. Like the library is mature. We can drop it in. We can wire it up with CodeMirror, which is the editing library we use. So I think like it's just really been over the past 10 years, these tools have incrementally improved where we could kind of plug them together and they could work. Like, we didn't have to build the whole editor. We didn't have to reinvent operational transform. So when you type a character and it goes to the server and your collaborator sees that, all we had to do is read the other guy's source code, understand the math, and then implement it, which it's not trivial, but it's much easier than inventing it ourselves.
I can't help but wonder, like, okay, so I'm guessing, like, are you using something like Docker on the back end to, you know, spin all this up to manage it?
Yeah, I could go in. How much detail do you want? I could go.
you can get nerdy. We've got a nerdy audience.
I could do a real deep dive here. Yeah, let's just stop me if it gets too crazy. But, so basically, like the first time when you go to glitch.com, you click on some project you think is interesting and you remix it, it spins up a new Docker container for that project. It copies the data volume, like basically the hard drive, whatever, the persistent data for that previous project, makes a new copy, and it launches the Docker container with that volume mounted in the file system. And then it connects to that container. You see the editor, you see the files. As you type characters, it goes through a bunch of AWS plumbing into EC2 instances, through like 3 proxies, into that actual Docker container itself. So the editor that you're typing in the browser is inside your container. Like, we don't have a separate sort of middle editor that then tries to manage the containers. Like, when you type a character, it goes straight into a WebSocket, like through all these jumps into the container itself. And I think that's one of the key insights we had when designing it. Originally, we didn't have it that way, and we had all kinds of sort of scaling problems, restarting. Like, it was slow if you had to completely tear down a container and recreate a new one. Like, that's just going to be, it's going to take extra seconds. It's going to be slow. If every time you type a character, it has to recreate a new container, that's going to be very hard to be under 2 seconds on your startup time. And we found by pushing the intelligence or like the complexity, like as far to the edge as possible, it makes things much more reliable on our internal system as well. It's basically just simple proxies and routing that handle the authentication and sort of setting up the WebSocket connection into your container. But then all the sort of dialogue or all the interaction is happening from your browser inside that container. So like our infrastructure is invisible at that point. And it really like helps people have the illusion of their own like private server, their own running machine, in addition to keeping the modifications localized. Like where they change is where they'll be used. When you type that character, it already is in the RAM on that machine in the file system that's mounted in this Docker container. And we just restart Node inside there and it comes up in under a second. So I think like that would be the key insight. So competitors, if you're listening, that's what you got to do.
How do you make sure somebody doesn't write like infinite loops or crazy stuff, either on purpose or accidentally, that affects everybody?
So we have, like, by using Docker, we can throttle based on CPU shares for each container. And like early on, we did have some problems where if one container was using 100% CPU, or if multiple, like say you had 4 of them and 4 CPUs on the machine, you could peg the machine and everyone would have a bad time. But we were able to sort of adjust the CPU usage quotas in Docker so that each container can really only slow itself down. The overall health of the machine will still stay pretty good. And we can scale up with multiple machines and distribute the containers on them. I think it's about 20 to 50 containers per machine. And like, so if you have one running at like 100% CPU, it only gets like an eighth or whatever of the total CPU share. So it can use all of that 1/8, but everyone else gets all the rest of it, and it's not too bad for them.
Are there any numbers you could share in terms of like how many containers are you guys managing?
Let's see. We have over 100,000 projects, but some of them are just like remixes or the welcome project or the default thing that haven't been modified necessarily. Maybe we have over 200,000 now. I mean, I haven't looked at the exact number recently, but at any time we have hundreds of active containers running, and we try and shut them down if they've been idle for 5 minutes or so, because we can spin them up so quickly. It doesn't really matter if it takes like an extra 2 seconds when your app has been asleep. So, but yeah, we have thousands of different containers come and go every month. And at any time, there's hundreds running, coming up and going down.
Do you have ideas about like which ones are most active? Like, do you have any kind of, I don't know if there are any public, but like people that are doing, you know, using it kind of more heavily?
We've got some internal metrics and dashboards, and we're planning very soon to make some of those public so you can see on your own apps how many people visit them, like what your traffic is. But we have some internal dashboards that track that fairly accurately. We just started using Datadog like several months ago, or maybe 6 months ago, and it blew my mind. It's amazing.
Are there any apps that are just getting tons of usage that are, you know, like maybe much more popular and much more heavily used than you might have expected?
There's one that's like a proxy for the Twitch API. Let me find the one. I can look at the dashboard and find the one. But it's basically like a CodeCamp proxy, I think free CodeCamp proxy for the Twitch API, so that when people connect, they have this series of like courses or classes, and one of them is how to use the Twitch API, because people are trying to learn, you know, how to use computers on the internet, how to use APIs, how to do these things. And Twitch will block your IP or block your, like, say you're teaching a course, right? And you have 60 people and they're all trying to use the Twitch API from like a classroom. Twitch will see, oh, all these requests are coming in. I'm going to throttle down the output, and then you can't teach the course anymore. So what they did is they built an app on Glitch that proxies the Twitch API with the credentials already in the app securely, so that a student then can hit that app and get the response. And then that app can also cache the responses. And since it's a class, they're all making similar requests. They only then make a reasonable number of requests. They don't get blocked by Twitch. And sort of like the, like kind of a great example of a glitch app is it just solves one very specific problem and like for a very specific group of people in a very simple way. And it's just, yet it gets, you know, hundreds of requests per, I guess like 1,000 an hour, maybe on average. So it's not a tremendous amount of traffic, but it's like solving their specific problem and like very easy and very simple. And if they need to modify it, then they can add to it as they need to.
So you mentioned the thing of like, you know, CodeCamp and learning. And that seems like one of the, like, aside from like, hey, this is cool to play with, that seems like a really cool application where it can be difficult to get people that are new to coding or just learning a new technology or something to get them all set up and get everything working. Like, so is that one of your kind of primary things that you're seeing people use this, or is that a pretty common use?
I think like Free Code Camp, for example, are like really big users of Glitch. And I talked to a lot of people who are using it like in their courses. And I know like A-Frame, the web VR project out of Mozilla, they're using Glitch for their A-Frame course, which has been pretty cool to see like web VR projects coming in and out of the Glitch community site. I think that one of the biggest barriers to learning how to code, or really teaching people how to code, is getting past the whole deployment process and how to get stuff online. You can teach somebody, once they like write an HTML file or JavaScript file, like how to like go through AWS and create an account and put it on there. But that takes like a lot of time. That's like another class in itself. And so if I, for example, want to teach people how to use, you know, A-Frame, for example, I also probably don't want to teach people how to actually get things on the internet. That's like a whole other thing. So Glitch is a great platform for taking that barrier away, because you start on Glitch with an app before you even, you know, sometimes before you even know what you want to do with it. So yeah, education is definitely a big focus that we have. And really what we're just trying to do is build something that everyone can use, whether they are developers, people who want to be developers, or people who are just using code to solve a specific problem that they have in their everyday life.
Yeah, that whole kind of like learning one thing at a time thing, I think is really huge, because like you said, it can be like trying to do everything at once is like trying to learn to juggle and ride a unicycle and eat a sandwich at the same time. Like it's just, you know, whereas like if you can just do one thing and like nail it and you're like, whoa, look, I did something. Like, I don't know. That's how I got started programming. You know, I mean, it's fun to make stuff. And if you can start with making one thing and seeing it work, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's like a self-motivating, like once it's live and you make a change, then you see that change live, you can get that feedback loop and you say, oh, my actions, they matter. I'm like doing it. It's working. Whereas if you have to go like days or whatever to set up your environment, set up your deployment, and then you finally see something, it's like, especially if it's like very challenging, because a lot of this, like the documentation doesn't make any sense. It assumes like, oh, you're already an expert on Git, on the command line, on Heroku, on AWS, on whatever. And like, if you are an expert on that, then okay, yeah, you can do it. It makes sense. But if you're getting started, like you go in, if you're like 3 hours in and you have nothing to show for it, it just feels terrible. And like people learn, like their brains tell them like, just don't try next time because it's not going to be worth it. It's never going to work. And like, if you need the whole weekend to do a project, and there's a 50% chance it doesn't even happen, like, you're just not going to waste your weekend next time. But with Glitch, like, you're up in 10 seconds. And, like, a lot of people I've seen on Twitter and other places, they said, I would never have even done this app if it wasn't for Glitch. Like, it was just, it's not that it makes it, like, twice as easy or 10 times easier. It's that because you can get something meaningful done within an hour, people, like, actually do things they wouldn't have even started before.
Yeah, and that's like the valuable thing for more seasoned developers. I mean, when I have tons of ideas of ridiculous things that I could possibly make, but I know that if I sit down and I don't have something to show for it within 20 minutes, I'm going to feel overwhelmed and like move on to something different. And I feel like, I mean, Daniel is probably the same, and y'all are probably too. How many like unfinished side projects do we have? Like, I have dozens and dozens of them. And that's because I spend a lot of time on deploying and environment setup and tooling and stuff like that. But yeah, so mostly I've been working out of Glitch, making Glitch apps. The community site itself is a Glitch app. And it's been great to like not have to do the DevOps stuff.
This reminds me a bit of like CodePen in a way, just for like front end. And there's others, you know, JSPen and all that. But like, in terms of like, hey, I can sketch something and then I can share it with other people. I'm wondering if I started with something like this is more kind of back end, and like if I'm doing front end related stuff, I don't know. Do you have things that like where you kind of copy something over? I don't know what my question is, but
I know what you're talking about, because this comes up a lot where people are like, oh yeah, like Glitch, it's like CodePen for backend. We do also have front end. You don't need to have like a package.json file or server.js file. You could just do front end stuff. We just found that there are a lot of people who have been waiting for something where they can just get like a full on working Node app running in seconds. But basically you can do anything. And I guess part of my job is making that more well known through how I build stuff and listening to other people's needs when they're learning how to code, and making sure that we curate the site in a way where all that stuff is a lot more obvious. basically want to be where you're like, I have an idea for a thing, whether it's a static website or an app, and it's like, I'll just go to glitch.com and start from there. Maybe I'll check and see if someone's done something similarly, or if they've got like the building blocks for it set up already. Maybe I'll just remix it, but that's just where I'm going to go. And within minutes, have something started, and hopefully in a shorter amount of time, have something finished that I can post on Twitter so Jen Schiffer can see and retweet.
From the super nerdy point of view, I like, because of remixing, is there like, there's some, like, do you have everything you create is by default, like a shareable license kind of thing that allows, I mean, you would need to have some kind of thing somewhere in a disclaimer that's like, yeah, cool, anything you make is remixable, right?
Well, everything has the remix button on it in the editor. We've been working on ways to, I've created like a button that you can add, but we've just been putting it on community stuff right now. And we are going to be working on a way in the interface to have people put license files in their projects, just like they would on GitHub. But I think the important thing is we need to make sure that when we update the user interface of the editor, it's something that everybody can understand. And a lot of new people probably have no concept of licensing. I mean, expert engineers still to this day have no idea what licenses are, and they just choose whatever license. So it's one challenge is like, how do we promote like licensing open web, you know, projects, but also educating people on like what those licenses mean and why you would choose one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, just like how we, you know, the projects all have README files or should have README files, you can put in a license file. It's just, I feel like the licensing education is like a whole other big component of it.
Yeah. You might be able to take advantage of like, GitHub's done some pretty decent stuff on this too, you know, like on their choose a license thing and all that. I agree. It's like one of those things where you don't want to overwhelm people with yet another thing, but it is cool to get people in the right direction with sharing with the right license and stuff.
It's that classic thing. Once you make something easier, then you can add complexity so you're back to where you started, you know. So now you don't have to learn Git, but you have to choose a license, choose backend or front end, choose where to deploy it. And it's like the fundamental human like homeostasis, I guess, of how quick we can develop apps. If it's too fast, we get uncomfortable, so we have to add complexity to slow ourselves down.
Exactly.
And every gain in like a framework that makes something simpler, that gives the room for the application developer to make it that much more complicated. And we do 100% of the time.
So, of course, the downside to being able to edit your app in real time is that you can break it in real time. Is there anything that you guys do or have plans to do to kind of, you know, help that problem?
Yes. We plan at some point to have really good rollback. So if you make a mistake, you can go back in time. We also plan to have some kind of branching. We've thought about it a lot. We've done some of the infrastructure work to get all the pieces in place so that you can branch and return cleanly. But we still want to make sure we do a good job on the user interface and explaining to people, like, because not everyone knows, oh yeah, you just branch and it's Git and you merge it. Like, that doesn't make sense to anyone. So we want to display in the user interface something that kind of like matches that, like the feelings people have. It's like, I'm editing this live, but it's going to be broken until I finish my line or my function or this section. I want to like a safe place where I can make all my edits. And then when it's working, I want to put all of those and then all of those go live at once. So it remains working and sort of finding a way to get the user interface to sort of explain that to people and then to present it to them like when they feel they need it so they don't have to learn it ahead of time.
Just playing with it, I like did some stuff, exported to GitHub, and then played with it some more and exported to GitHub again. I mean, I guess that's where I could kind of save my work, right?
Yeah, we have some workarounds in the meantime. Like you can download zips, you can export to GitHub, you can export to GitHub is like, if you know it was working as a snapshot, you can even remix your own project and then like rename it, like rename your old one and then rename your new one to your old one. So there's all kinds of like workarounds you can do. But long-term we want to have like that type, like we'll observe what works for people with all these workarounds and make an official way to support them. So it's much less, you know, hacked together.
one of the most fun things to share out on GitHub is like my passwords and API keys and stuff.
my pseudo commands. And
Exactly. So how can you help me do that or not do that maybe? Like for instance, how do you help me to not share my passwords out on GitHub? Or like if someone remixes my project, do they get my passwords and databases and things?
Well, we have the .env environment file that's in if you create like a Node project, and you can put all your secrets in there. And if somebody remixes your project, they get the environment file, but not the values of those things. So yeah, we've created some apps, like Slackbots, for example, Slackbots, Twitchbots, TwilioBots, all the applications that have API keys from some other service, like will give you tokens and sometimes many tokens. And you just put it into your environment file and work that into your app. And if someone else wants to remix it, they can remix it. And you should probably in your README file explain where to get those tokens and stuff, and then you just pop it in, and then it works. So that's one of my favorite things about the Glitch apps, because when I started, we were working with Slack, and I was building a bot for their new like link unfurl, and I was like, okay, I need to build this in a way where anybody can remix it, and they're not going to get any secrets, but I just document where to get them and where to put them, and then they're good to go. And I think also like another part of the problem with like education is like teaching people like don't hard code your passwords or tokens like in like the other files. That might not be as intuitive to people, but just like, I don't know, having the file there in place, seeing .env and looking at it, and it already has some example like secret attributes, you think like, oh, this is probably where all the secret things should be going on.
Yeah, and the whole thing where, like, I'm remixing something that somebody else built, like, probably the things you feature as, like, remix projects on the front page are kind of set up the right way. So, like, I'm looking at a good example to get started. Like you're saying with, like, ENV and stuff like that.
Yeah, and, like, they have good READMEs usually. If it's, like, if we're featuring them, they'll have a README that'll tell you, here's the steps you need to, like, go to this page on Slack and find your token and make this request and then put your token in your end file and... If you do these like three steps, then your app will work. And like we actually are working on making that even easier, adding the ability to remix with pre-populated tokens, but we might have to work with some of these providers so that we can get the endpoints more accessible and say, you can remix this Glitch app and it can automatically like make a request for you and populate your tokens and sort of like an OAuth kind of thing, but hopefully less complicated. That's not like we have the pieces in there where if you already have tokens, you can one click remix and they're pre-populated. But long term, we'd really like to sort of work with like the Slacks, the Twilios, all of these API providers, because they want people to have their tokens set up correctly. They want people to be able to get started in zero steps instead of 10 steps. And so I think we should be able to find like a really easy way so you can just maybe even from their documentation or from their website, if you're logged in, they can provide a button that will, you click it and it's pre-populated with the tokens with the correct scoped permissions exactly for what you need. We can dream of a better future.
Yeah, and I think it's really close. I mean, you know, Facebook Messenger bots, like on Facebook Messenger bots documentation, they have like a remix Glitch. And so it gets you the app going and we have it in place where they can add those tokens in. But this is like, I think, a fairly new idea. So like we're talking to different like companies about how like they can make it like so much easier to within seconds have somebody building something with their APIs. And like Daniel said, that's what they want. It's what we want. Perfect world. C'est la vie. And that's ultimately also like what we're trying to do is like we're just lowering barriers here, you know, whether it's learning to code or figuring out what you want to work with or really just like getting APIs and using them to build really cool things. Another like big barrier is all these things require all these tokens and it's kind of hard to find out where they all are at. So we're also trying to help people solve that problem.
I guess I could embed this. Like I'm thinking of a case where I've got like a static site and I would like to have say a I don't know, Twitter thing or whatever, but something that's like actually doing, or something doing a search or whatever, could I embed a glitch thing like in another app, like in another web page? I mean, just like iframe or something?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a glitch app that is like our admin panel for our services, and like it has like you have to put in a token so you have admin. It's not like a public, you know, anyone can admin. But we use that in like an iframe in our dashboards. We use it in some other things. And so because it's like following these open web standards, iframes work, all the normal web stuff you would want to do, like it should work. And if it doesn't work, like open a thread in our support forum and say, hey, I'm trying to do this. Why doesn't this work? And we'll make it work because we want everything. We just want it to be like a normal web page. You know, we don't want it to be weird.
Okay, here's probably the most important question. Why are there two fishes? You know the glitch thing? It's there's two fish. I'm confused.
our glitch fish. Do you know the is it Children's Day? Actually, is today Children's Day?
Every day is Children's Day.
So the glitch fish, I think June 1st is Children's Day.
I think in the U.S., but in Japan, I think it's today.
Well, I just looked up and I'm seeing November 20th.
I guess every different place.
There's international, and then there's like universal.
Yeah, I think Japan's one is today.
Yeah,
May 5th.
Yeah. And on Children's Day, they wave these really cool carp fish flags. There's an emoji for them, and the glitch fish were inspired by them. They're fun. They're cute. It changed color on the app as the day changes, which I am super into. And yeah, they're just cool and fun.
And it's got some deep symbolism as well. There's like two of them, so it sort of means like glitch is collaborative. It works with a friend. A group of fish is called a school, so you can use it for learning. Like, it's like whole, like if you look at the back of the dollar bill, it's that level of symbolism, you know. Illuminati conspiracies for days.
I was going to say, if you fold the glitch, one of the glitch stickers 20 ways, you get the pyramid, and that's not true.
It might be. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I haven't tried it. I mean,
it could be.
Now you're making me wonder about all my what I thought were randomly generated project names, and I'm wondering if Flax and Happy Pear actually means something.
I mean, everything has a meaning, right?
Yeah, but the meaning was in your heart all along.
There are some cool subtle things I'm noticing. Like I didn't realize for a while, but if I like you have a dark theme, which of course is everyone has to have a dark theme. But there's like as I'm clicking around in the interface, you have kept it pretty simple. But there's some cool little stuff in here that I'm seeing. This is neat.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like forget, and I forget too, how it's like to be introduced to something as terrifying as an IDE for writing code. I think of like I teach people how to code all the time, and you know, you start them out with like TextPad or something like that, and then some people come through and they have Dreamweaver or Coda and like all these other like different IDEs available for building on the web, and it's hard to build something that like makes sense and will continue to make sense for people. Like the one thing I really like about Glitch when I started working here was that it's a text editor that I think is friendly to new people, to new coders, but it's also a code editor that looks like ones that they might end up using at work. You know, you've got the sidebar with the file tree, and then you have the editor with the syntax highlighting. This is all like really like kind of normal and breaks away from other IDEs that put everything all into one window, which serves a purpose of prototyping. But I like that I am building like actually like ambitious like apps in here. And for someone to like start out coding on Glitch, I can imagine them graduating to being, you know, a more intermediate developer with the tools that they're learning with it.
Yeah, one of our goals is for everything, like you have to learn a lot to use computers effectively to develop the software that solves your problems. But we didn't want to have anything like extra that, oh, this is the glitch way, so you have to do it this one way that's different and doesn't actually have any bearing on reality. We wanted to make sure that everything you learn is just a step on the path that you would learn eventually. So like files and file trees, or like syntax errors in the text editor. Like those are things eventually you'll have to like become very familiar with. And even the environment file and things like that, it's, we sort of, when we put stuff in the editor, we look around and we think, what is like the current best practice? What is the general understanding of this? And how can we present it in a very simple way that just works? That if you were to move to somewhere else or to learn more, you're like, oh yeah, cool, that, like, it would seem effortless. Like, oh yeah, it just worked. Like, obviously everything's supposed to work. But if anyone, like, I'm sure we've all used tools where we look at it and it's like, why did they do it this way? All it does is like make me, it's like a hassle. I have to work around this. So we really want to make sure that everything we do in the editor, everything we present to people is like pedagogically sound and sets them up on the right path for success.
Yeah. And we're not locking you into how you write your code, and we're not going to lock you into the process that you use to writing code or getting used to through different tools.
That balance is so hard because, like, I've written some tutorials and, you know, introductions to coding and stuff. And you get like, you get constant, like, I, on the same thing, I'll get people saying, this is too complicated, I'm confused, I'm lost. And I'll also get other people saying, you're not showing sound practices, this should be abstracted, this should be a blah, 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 factory, test provider, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that. Like, I'm sure this has to be kind of a struggle constantly to do this right, but...
Yeah, I mean, all the time I hear, why don't you add this, why don't you add that? And I always say, like, well, if I add it, how do I explain to somebody who's new, like, what this is? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, we all forget that everything on the internet was not made specifically to us individually. That's a hard, hard truth, I think, to swallow, but that's the case. And yeah, it's, I think myself personally, it's been quite a challenge trying to figure out how to think of literally everyone in making decisions. So it's, I imagine it's even harder for the rest of the guys on the glitch team.
Yeah. And as humans, we have these like weird psychological blind spots, especially when it comes to learning things and knowledge. There's basically like two kinds of knowledge in the world. The stuff that everybody knows, and the stuff that nobody knows because it's impossible. And the way you draw that line is that line somehow magically is exactly what you know. And so, like, if you know Git, then yeah, everybody knows Git. It's easy, of course. And if you don't know Git, it's like, it's impossible. Nobody can know it. It's, no one can understand it. And like that day you learn Git that morning, you instantly switch over and you forget that it was ever a different way. Like, yeah, everyone always knows it. And, like, so it's important to maintain perspective and to really understand that, and like, you can see this in yourself. Like, I see it in myself all the time, is you learn something like an hour ago and someone asks about it, like, oh yeah, what, you don't know that? And like, you just like, but you just learned it an hour ago and you forgot, you've immediately erased your whole history of how you were struggling with it so much. And like, now you're like, oh yeah, I'm the cool guy, I know everything.
Yeah. I found that like the best thing to do, the best mindset to have, is to never feign surprise. Like, if someone, like, is like, I'm trying to figure out this thing, never being like, really, you're trying to figure out, like, why, blah, blah, blah. Like, just having the attitude that everybody says something for, like, a reason, and you have to listen and learn their process so that you can better help them. I mean, in my case, like, and Daniel's also, like, we're trying to serve, like, people who want to write code, and so we have to, like, listen and not feign surprise and, you know, try to put ourselves in the shoes of different people. It's a lot of shoes. Lots of shoes.
And like, it is hard because of these biases and these like psychological blind spots. Like, when you learn something, it's hard to remember it, you ever not knowing it. And like, it's so easy to forget that just moments ago you didn't know that thing, or like a year ago, or however long ago it took you to learn it. And especially today, and especially in internet technology and all of these things, there are so many new things coming up that most people know almost nothing compared to like everything that exists. It's like, most people don't know most things, which is probably why we're so defensive about knowing things. Like, it feels bad if you don't know stuff, but Like, I don't know. It's still fun. It's exciting. But it's important to have empathy and remember that, like, the world isn't everything that you know is obvious and everything else is impossible. Like, it's many more shades than that.
And if you like to learn things, the flip side is there's so much cool stuff to learn, you know?
Yeah. You'll never run out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same. I'm like that. I'm into that. Like, people were like, oh, I get overwhelmed. And I'm like, I like thrive on being overwhelmed. I've been overwhelmed for probably like 20 years straight now. I just like get bored so easily. And I'm like, oh, this new thing, like, I'll learn it. Whether I use it or not, it's another thing. And that's why it's really important for like having something like Glitch where I can just like quickly prototype or try something out and not invest too much time in it. Because again, like, time is limited and I have a job and all that. But we just want like people to have a place where they can get excited again about new things coming about and having a chance to try it really quickly. So there's going to be a lot of like, I see a lot of like high quantity, low, I guess, quality in terms of like production level stuff being created. And I think that's really great. And I think that would be cool if we were the place that people went to do all that.
So one way when I'm learning something that I kind of find my bearings is I follow somebody or, you know, that seems to know what they're doing. And I'm noticing, like, if I go to the front page of Glitch, I see, you know, some things by the Glitch team and some other things by, you know, people that obviously know what they're doing. And I can look at their names, but I can't like click through on them. And I'm thinking, like, you could have like a, you know, like in a way GitHub is kind of like Facebook for programmers. Is that an intentional thing where you, like, could you make something where I can click through and see other glitches that a certain person has made? Did you think of that or intentionally not? Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've got some plans for sort of more social features or more like curators or people who can like collect, you know, apps and tutorials and make lists. We just haven't implemented much of that yet, but we've got some ideas.
Cool. Yeah, all this stuff. I mean, we know who's worked on a project, who's updated projects and when. It's just kind of like, how do we want to present that? And also, because this is really like a community based, like, I don't know, I see this as like a collaborative social platform, which no one's really done specifically with like Node.js application editors. So we always have to have like a lot of talks about how we're going to moderate things. Like, we have to like preemptively be prepared for people using it as a tool for harassment and stuff like that. So these are all conversations that we have had and are having. And definitely one of them is providing a place where you can look at what other people are making besides from them posting online, I made this.
One of my favorite things that I'm seeing in your kind of ideas area is the games thing. And I'm thinking about this partly. I've got three daughters. And I've like done stuff trying to teach them to code, and I've made mistakes in like trying to teach them languages first, as opposed to all of them want to make games. Like, every kid I talk to these days, they're all into games. Like, it's because it's visual. That's how I started, was like writing stupid text-based games, you know?
Yeah, it's like interactive too. Like, you get to make the computer do something and then like interact with it right away often. And yeah, it's just like really visceral. Like, you can feel when you make a change, like you can reload your game and now it's different. Like, you've had an impact on the world.
Kids, I think, are like natural great storytellers. And so the things that involve storytelling, which are like games or creation of art, is what really resonates with them. And me, I have like a sort of childlike brain when it comes to like what I want to build myself. And I just found that things like games and art really resonate with kids. And you can teach theory of programming through all of those things. And that's like one of my favorite pages on the community site is the game site, and we have a couple of really cool ones in there. We'll have even more going through. But yeah, kids, parents tell me all the time, like, my kid loves Minecraft. Anything that looks like Minecraft or is related to blocks, like, that's what they like. And I think of when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Legos. So Legos is like Minecraft IRL minus the hot lava, right?
I hear they're releasing a new Hot Lava Lego that's coming out soon with a co-promotion with Minecraft.
So do you have any good JavaScript framework jokes?
Yeah, I've got a great one that came to me fairly recently. I was thinking, you know, JavaScript frameworks are kind of like a reverse Brigadoon, because Brigadoon comes once every 1,000 years, and there's 1,000 new JavaScript frameworks every year. So, rimshot.
Oh, wait.
Baseball sound.
Yeah.
I got to use the, yes. Right,
so, editor, you can, you know, put in the real rimshot instead of the...
I was going to say use the baseball sound, but...
Awesome.
Organs are coming back.
Yeah, and then anytime anyone laughed in the podcast, be sure to splice that in right after the joke,
yeah,
too.
So
it sounds like it was better than it was.
I'm not using this platform to its full advantage. All right, so what's next? What's on deck for you folks?
I'm going out on the road to tell people about Glitch, because the internet's a bubble, so I got to go out and talk to people in real life and get them excited about what we're trying to do and find out what they're looking to do so we can work that into our roadmap, and just to meet people who are excited about using code to solve problems and finding a place to do that, which is our website, glitch.com. Also curating the community site, and yeah, that's what I'm up to. What about you, Daniel?
Yeah, we got a lot of good editor features coming out pretty soon. We should have, in the near future, a way, like if you're stuck on your project or you need help, we'll have something coming out that'll make that a lot better. We should have better versioning and rollbacks fairly soon as well. And I mean, like we've got 10 years of features that we know we want to have, but in the next like year or so, so like that versioning, rollbacks, branching, sort of better Git integration, maybe like bi-directional with GitHub. We'll see if that's, if we can get it done easy enough and keep the design simple enough so that, you know, it's not like, here, learn a bunch of Git nonsense and now you've got Git integration. Like, we want to actually do some of the design work to help people out, but yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And I think like Daniel spoke to how we have some cool things coming up for, helping people, you know, get help when they need it. Another one of the big barriers to learning how to code is like accepting the fact that you don't know everything, especially when you're surrounded by or look up to like engineers who act like they know everything, or you think that they know everything. And so we're trying to build into this tool a way for people to be okay with asking questions and getting help and trying to make helping each other in the process of learning to code or learning to code with a certain thing, a really cool, fun, altruistic kind of space. So keep an eye out for that cool, fun stuff.
One other question I should have asked earlier is, so everything's free now. Is there like a Glitch Enterprise on the way, or is like, should I worry that you're going to like turn off my existing sites or something like that?
We're not turning off anything that is free now will remain free. That's sort of, Anil wrote a piece about this, about, you know, how we're not going to screw up by locking up things that you've gotten used to. I like the idea of like companies that want to be closer to the people using their tools. They should be paying for that service, as opposed to like an individual engineer who's, you know, teaching his daughter how to build games.
Yeah, so we don't want to try and get the extra quarter out of some kid who's trying to learn. We'd rather just say, like, there are businesses that have very real benefits from people being productive on their API, from improving their ecosystem. And those businesses, it should be very cheap, and like, it'll pay off 10 times what they put in if they can have access to these type of, like, if people can get started more easily, if their ecosystem's richer. And so we can generate a tremendous value in that area, and hopefully it'll subsidize, like, all of these free features. And it's not, like, too expensive to run these containers. It's, like, 20 cents a month, roughly. So, like, it just adds up if you have a million of them. But,
yeah,
like, we hope, like, we plan to, get the business model in such a way that everyone comes out ahead by generating a lot of value, not so much trying to just like extract value from, you know, the people who we instead want to help and make things more accessible. We want to say, now put in your credit card and welcome to Glitch.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, if you make something now, it's not going to go away.
Cool. Yeah. All right. We also have plans even on the consumer side. Like if for whatever reason, the enterprise, we can't subsidize as much as we want with like enterprise sales, but we could provide things for power users who like want more disk space, bigger containers, always running. Like there's a whole kind of, then it gets in more like the traditional hosting path, but it's, we have a lot of options we're exploring and we want to explore it before we say, oh, whoops, we're out of money. Better, you know, make everyone's life awful.
Cool. But yeah, there's nothing more. There's nothing that I hate more than like using a service and then being told like, okay, well now like we want you to pay for it, or going to use a service and then being like, well, first you have to enter your credit card. Like those are the two things that we're trying to avoid among other things.
Cool. Yeah. I can include a link in Anil's post, how we want to grow up Glitch. I think it's the one you're talking about. So
yeah,
that looks cool. Awesome. And those sound like reasonable things. Like those are things where if I'm like, hey, I'm using a lot of memory or I'm using a ton of stuff, I'm fine with paying more for it. But for like file new, for like simple stuff, get started, that sounds really cool to just, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of it, like it has gotten tremendously cheaper in the past 10 years to like with containers and AWS and all of these things to actually run like an app that is on the internet that responds to events like a Slack bot or something. Like it is pennies or whatever, you know, nickels to run that. And all these like shared hosting services or things where it's like $10 a month or like it just keeps getting cheaper every year. And it hopefully will keep getting cheaper for some time. And then the amount you can expect for free just of the internet in general, like GitHub pages and all these things, like there's just a tremendous, because it costs them like pennies a month too, you know? So there's so much we can provide for people that really doesn't cost us that much. And like it helps people, it builds goodwill, it builds the community, and like the community itself then generates far more value for other people, for themselves, than just those like pennies a month it costs to run things.
Right. Cool. All right. Well, we should probably wrap up there. So, awesome. Thanks a bunch for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon on Herding Code. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, and then...
baseball sound.
Yes, we're on the same page. Hey, this is John. So we recorded the show in May 2017. I'm actually releasing it in November of 2017. Our site was hacked, we were offline for a while, and then things got crazy busy with work, and I'm sorry. And sorry to the Glitch folks. But I reviewed the recent blog posts, and the main thing that seems to have changed since this was recorded was that they've added user profiles, which is really cool. So that's linked to in the show notes. Please check that out. Thanks.